I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's crack on with today's case, because honestly, this is a horrendous case, guys. It really is, because one of the things about being a human being is we all want connection, right? And I know that some of you will be sitting there like with your social diaries, and your social diaries will just be extensive, and you'll have a night every night that involves some kind of social interaction. And then there are people like me. I literally have such a small social life and such a tiny group of friends. And that doesn't mean that I'm not loved by those around me. It's just that, you know, it's quite hard, particularly as an adult, meeting new people and connecting with new people. And when you have that opportunity and all of a sudden you connect with a new human being, it's so exciting, particularly if there's an effortless level of communication between the two of you, because it is so rare. And for those of you who are like me, who don't really have a social diary, you'll completely connect with what I'm saying. And like I said, Shakira Spencer is guilty of just that, just wanting to invite a person into her world and to hang out with a person in her world and to trust a person in her world. And that's her downfall. That's her downfall. Being a good human being who actually had the good grace to allow somebody into her space and to share that space with her. Let's talk about our victim. She's born on the 13th of June, 1987. She was born to parents Lloyd and Medjia. She was raised in Ealing in London. And she's described by people who knew her, and there's a lot of people who knew her, particularly when she was younger, and obviously her family members who adored her, as being this really bubbly, positive, kind, and incredibly beautiful soul, and that she really cared for people. She was really caring and compassionate to those around her. Now, listen, one of the things that you'll read about in the papers if you look at this case is that there were some individuals out there who saw her as being naive and vulnerable and innocent. And there are other individuals who said that on an intellectual level, she might have had some kind of developmental delay. But I don't think that that's how she came across to the average human being. I think she was just a really kind human being who got on with people and went out of her way to be nice. And also, I think it's really challenging when you read in the papers people being described as vulnerable and innocent. On one level, you think to yourself, well, they're really beautiful qualities, but they're also literally connected to childhood, aren't they? Vulnerable, innocent, or the elderly even, but more so to children. And she wasn't a child. She was a mother of two. And until we talk about the horrors of what befell her and the people that she connected with, she was a good mother. So just because somebody comes across as a kind of individual who isn't bitchy or nasty or cruel or insidious, then, you know, that doesn't necessarily make them vulnerable and innocent. It just makes them kind and compassionate and at risk, because we're all at risk, aren't we, of being exploited for our good nature, and also being exploited by the people that we trust because we see the best in them. And how often do we talk about this on the channel, that people judge others by their own belief systems? And that, of course, means that we can be nice to people who are not deserving of our time. Now, in 2010, Shakira has her first child, a little boy. And then the following year, she has a second son. And her sister, Irina, said that she was somebody who'd always wanted to be a mother. So she was absolutely stoked. She was over the moon, absolutely in bliss, when she had two children who were close together in age. And I can completely connect with that. I had two boys who were close in age when I was younger. What a joy it is to see them blossom in their friendship and their activities and their humour and their competition. All those things happening at the same time. Now, in 2014, Shakira meets the fateful, grotesque, despicable Ashana Studholme. They ended up being kind of neighbours. They were living in the same block of flats in Hanwell in Ealing. What can you say about Ashana? Well, she was a sociable woman. She liked to go out and party. She liked drinking. She liked taking drugs. And Shakira, that wasn't what she was naturally inclined to do. She was someone who didn't engage in those behaviours prior to meeting Ashana, from what I can see. She was just desperate to be liked. So when she's got this new friend, and this new friend's like, come to raves, come to gigs, let's go out for drinks. Understandably, it's really convenient having somebody very close to your location who wants to hang out socially. And also, even if you're not into the clubbing and raving and partying scene, it can be quite a lot of fun occasionally to go and do it anyway. And I would imagine that she feels that this is an opportunity for familiarity and comfort and friendship to just grow in an environment close to her home. And to be fair, initially the pair did seem to be really good friends. But Ashana's lifestyle just doesn't turn out to be a good influence. Bear in mind, we have an individual here who is quite impressionable. So Shakira's behaviour seems to spiral a little bit when she meets her. It seems like she was somebody who wanted to adopt Ashana's seedy habits just to fit in. And again, I know that that would then fit in with people saying, well, she was naive and vulnerable and innocent. But actually, connectors are really powerfully important in relationships. I mean, come on. Who's never been in a situation where they've maybe taken on an interest that their friend likes, or that the boy that they like likes, or the girl that they like likes? Like, it's just a really human factor, isn't it? It's something that we do because it builds rapport. So even when your friends are doing things that are a little bit naughty, the truth is, for the most part, you'll go along with it a lot of the time because you just want to feel part of that individual relationship or group that you're hanging out with. And we get to 2017. At this point, Shakira becomes acquainted with some of Ashana's friends. Now, these included Sean Pendlebury. Actually, Ashana was dating him, so he's more a boyfriend intro. And also Lisa Richardson. Now, during that time, Shakira's relationship had actually ended. So she's now single. And that means that she's got more time. So she begins getting closer to Ashana and her friends. Now, as time goes on, it appears that Shakira starts becoming more and more isolated, literally from everyone else in her life. And this includes her family. And we always know when we think about coercive control, for example, that that's one of the tools that coercive controllers use, isn't it? It's about making sure that that person does not have support around them, making sure that individual is in a situation where they're easily malleable and susceptible, making sure that person is living in fear, for example. And that kind of breaks down their support strategies and foundations. And it means that people who would ordinarily swoop in to save them don't have an opportunity to, because they're really not seeing things playing out behind closed doors. Now, in August 2021, Shakira's sister, Arena, she invited her to the christening of her daughter. This is via text, but apparently the message never got delivered, and also messages on her social media didn't go through. She actually said at this point, listen, me and my sister were really close, but the interactions between us had just gradually reduced. She said that one of the reasons that she kind of let that slide was that Shakira was a busy mum of two. So obviously there are a lot of activities that she'll be doing. There's a lot of energy that goes in the direction of her children. And so her sister just kind of accepted it. Also, Irina's daughter had been born a few months prior and she'd needed heart surgery. So anybody who's ever had a child that's unwell, your focus is absolutely on your child. Even when you see the relationships are sliding, you don't have the energy or focus that's required to pursue them because you're concentrating on your sick child. Now, although Shakira had actually made plans to visit her sister, she actually told Arena that the reason she wanted to visit her was she needed to tell her something. The visit ends up getting cancelled because of Arena's daughter needing to be in hospital, and that's a real missed opportunity. And I think that for Arena, it must be really hard to know that her sister wanted to confide in her and she never got a chance. Now, the sisters lived an hour and a half apart during the time that contact reduced. And bear in mind, this is also during a really challenging time for, I don't know, every single one of us with respect, which was there were loads of restrictions in place because of the COVID-19 debacle. And Shakira and Arena didn't really want to visit each other during that period of time because her daughter had heart issues and that meant that she got a weakened immune system and the need to use public transport to see each other. So Arena just kind of said to herself, you know, we'll see each other when we'll see each other. I know my sister will be in touch with me eventually. Now, in February 2022, Irina calls Shakira on a landline, and the reason for that is her sister's no longer got a mobile. And she said one of the things that was just obvious from the get-go was that Shakira didn't seem herself. She didn't have that bubbly, gregarious nature that we were used to, and it really bothers her. Bear in mind as well, at this point, she's kind of saying to Shakira, we need to see each other again. She actually invited her and her nephews to her daughter's first birthday party. But at this point, Shakira tells us some unbelievably shocking news. She tells her that their dad has custody of the children now. And apparently Irina was just blown away. She was stunned beyond belief. She said, I could not imagine why on earth would that happen? And bear in mind, this is after a period of time where they've not been speaking regularly. They were only speaking over the phone. And so Irina thinks to herself, you know what? This is not the time or place to actually go into detail about why this is played out, what the hell has happened for you not having custody of your children. But bear in mind, this conversation happens after a period of time when they kind of lost touch. They were only speaking over the phone at this point. So Irina thinks to herself, well, when I see her physically, this is when I'm going to talk about it more. Because understandably, this is massive. But you want to kind of be face to face when you're exploring what the hell has happened in your life to lead you to a situation, a position where your children, your boys that you adore, are no longer present daily in your life. Now, sadly, even though Shakira was invited to Irina's daughter's birthday party, she doesn't turn up. Now, this is really bothering the wider family full stop. And Shakira's father, Lloyd, goes and visits his daughter. But one of the bizarre things that happens during that encounter is she just will not let him up to her flat. She says it's not convenient. Now, I get that everybody has a busy life. And of course, people calling around at an unexpected level, that might mean it's not very convenient for you to talk at that point. Come back at another date. Let's meet for a coffee. But they actually spoke for around an hour in the foyer. So it clearly wasn't inconvenient. It's just she didn't want him going up to the flat. So what the hell was happening in her flat? And he said he walked away just absolutely blindsided. The appearance of Shakira had changed so dramatically, and guys, it really had. She had had this dramatic weight loss. She literally appeared emaciated. I've worked with eating disorders many times throughout my career, and believe me, when you take a look at her, she looks like she's nutritionally starving. She actually told her dad that she felt unloved, and he said, listen, why would I be here if I didn't love you? And he then said, please come and spend your birthday with me. Now, of course, perception is everything, isn't it? So her father's perspective, which is, I love you and I know I love you and I'm going to show you that I love you because I want you to spend time with me. That's why I'm here right now in this foyer talking to you. But if she doesn't actually use that belief system to ingest herself and actually to believe herself that she's worthy and that she's loved, you can still feel that you are lonely and that you aren't necessarily authentically cared for, even when everybody around you is screaming that you are wrong. But she says to him, well, okay, I'll think about it. So she doesn't confirm that she will go and spend her birthday with him, but she's had the offer and she'll think about it. Unbelievably, sadly, that is the last time her father's ever going to see his daughter. Now, one of the last times that her mother saw Shakira, she also said that it was awful because she apparently had bruising all over her body as if she'd been trampled on. Now, everyone's different. If my children turned up like that, I think I'd just drag them off, refuse for them to be allowed to go anywhere by themselves, and just keep them at home till they were healed and I was sure they were safe. But I equally know how challenging it is for family members to actually do that. So I'm sure that her mother had these real concerns, real challenges, real fears about what was happening to her daughter. But unless Shakira's going to open up and have that conversation, it's very difficult where adults are concerned to actually change the direction they're traveling in. Now we get to the 25th of September, 2022. At this point, Irina's invited Shakira to a family barbecue, but she doesn't turn up. So we're seeing this absolute pattern. She's disengaged with her family. She's not turning up to any social activities. She looks terrible. There is something clearly untoward happening in her life. Now, on that very same day of the barbecue, the police end up receiving a call from one of Shakira's neighbours. And this neighbour is like, I don't know where she is, but there's something really strange going on at her home. And you'll all know instantly when I say this, what's going to transpire. But for the neighbour, they just thought that she hadn't been around for a long period of time and that she needed her well-being being checked on. And the main reason for that is, aside from the absence of seeing Shakira, they'd noticed maggots coming out from under her door. So of course the police then go and do a welfare check, and wow, their worst fears are realised. They find the body of Shakira in her flat. Now that night, just after midnight on September the 26th, emergency services were actually contacted by a member of Sean Pendlebury. So Sean Pendlebury is the boyfriend, of course, of Shakira's friend. They've been hanging out together. His uncle had literally called the police to say that Pendlebury had confessed to the murder of Shakira. And one thing I'll say is, isn't it incredible that that man picked up the phone and called emergency services? He didn't stand on the side of the person who suggested he'd killed Shakira. He called the police and he turned him in. And that says something really courageous. A lot of people feel that they don't want to get involved in these situations, but this individual basically blew the case open because of that honesty. So he goes on to tell the police that basically Pendlebury has confessed to the murder. He said that he'd carried it out with two accomplices, Ashana Studholme and Lisa Richardson. Now, I find that really interesting, the fact that he actually expresses who his co-conspirators are to his family member, because that's not a police interrogating him. He doesn't need to say that. And that makes me feel that that particular description of all three of them being heavily involved in the murder of Shakira is the truth, because he didn't need to say it to his uncle. It's not going to mitigate or minimize the reality of his actions. And even though they're going to all be interviewed by the police independently, that particular statement, I think, is the most truthful. Now, at this point, clearly the police go and arrest them all, and it's absolutely clear that none of them react how they should act. Because, with respect, if you've had nothing to do with the murder of someone, you are going to be losing your mind if the police are arresting you for it. And even though you can see that they're trying to cook up these reactions that make them seem less culpable or a little bit surprised, you can just tell it isn't real. Now, the police at this point, they begin to piece together what had happened to Shakira. And it's very clear from the get-go, she had been the victim of what can only be described, I suppose, as a campaign of horrendous abuse and torture. And this abuse and torture is at the hands of three people that she thought were her friends. So 37-year-old Ashana Studholme, 25-year-old Sean Pendlebury, and 43-year-old Lisa Richardson. They're all people that she gravitated towards, she was introduced to by somebody she trusted and that she genuinely thought she could trust. They'd become Facebook friends and everything. These people are meant to be protectors, not violators. Now, it turns out that this trio of witches, honestly, that's the only way I can describe them, is they had absolutely started to incrementally control Shakira. So this had gone over a prolonged period of time, in the year, in fact, before she was finally killed. They had financially exploited her by taking control of her finances. They treated her apparently like a slave. They abused her horrifically. They starved her. That's why she looked so emaciated, because she wasn't allowed to eat. They fed her apparently only tomato ketchup sachets, which is not going to sustain anybody. Also, and this is just absolutely rage-provoking, but also the dehumanization and the humiliation where Shakira is concerned is evidenced by what I'm going to tell you in this next statement, because they forced her into sex work and then they took the money she earned from it. They basically pimped her out. This is the woman who was not in any way, shape or form inclined personally to make those choices. These were forced upon her. She couldn't consent. Every single person that had sex with her, although they would have been paying money thinking that she was the one earning it, albeit maybe some of it would go to a pimp, because that's what happens in the sex industry a lot of the time, particularly when we're talking about people on the streets, for example. But they would not realise that every single time she was being raped. That's it. She was being raped. She couldn't consent. She didn't want to consent. She didn't earn any money from it. She was forced into this situation. She was sex trafficked and exploited. It's as simple as that. And I suppose the term that people would know in this present day and age about this kind of behaviour is that she's a victim of cuckooing. And certainly it seems like they moved into her home, they took everything from her and they exploited her. So she had nothing, not even her own home, that she could call safe. Now, Pendlebury, he'd actually lived in her flat while she was made to sleep in a bike shed. When you actually consider the kind of malevolence and sadism in the actions of these torturous traitors that were meant to be friends of hers, there is nothing more exempling of that than taking her home from her and making her sleep in a bike shed. Also, they use her as basically a slave for everything. So she has to run errands late at night, or she has to go out in the early hours of the morning. And there are also really awful messages and voice notes sent between the killers. And those messages show Shakira, this innocent, lovely human being beaten, and all the while her tormentors are just mocking and laughing at her. You know what? It really reminds me of a case I did a long time ago, Gemma Hayter. I covered it in a few documentaries on TV, and I've covered it myself. And this really is resonant of what happened to Gemma Hayter, a horrific British case. And this also demonstrates that when we say things like lessons will be learned in cases like Gemma Hayter, well, you know what? They're not. Because individuals like Shakira are being murdered at the hands of these merciless torturers, and they're happening time and time again. Now we get to September 2022, and at this point the abuse and torture that Shakira was experiencing just came to what can only be described, I suppose, as this horrifying peak. She had the most appalling and sustained attack. It lasted apparently over a number of days, and that sadly culminated in her death. But believe me, at the end of what she went through, I would imagine that death was a relief and a release, because what she went through was beyond inhumane, beyond emotionally, physically, and humanely corrupt. It was disgraceful, despicable, and diabolical on every single level. On the morning of the 9th of September, Shakira, by the way, at this point, is already in a terrible state. She's really injured because she's been beaten many, many times before. She had these really serious injuries to her feet, to her head, to her body. Now, at this point, in spite of how badly injured she is, Studholme, Pendlebury and Richardson carry on attacking her. They're stomping on her head. Now, bear in mind, we all know how dangerous it is to get kicked in the head, but to actually be repeatedly stomped on your head, we are talking about something that is often going to prove fatal. If not fatal, something that's going to cause serious disability in the future. They're also punching her, they're kicking her. This is all three of them. Then they burn her. They burned her with flames. They burned her with scalding water. Anybody who's ever burnt themselves, you know how unbelievably painful even a small burn is. Then they film her, they make her undress, and they are humiliating and demeaning and degrading her as they're inflicting these awful injuries. She was beaten to the brink of death until she basically collapsed. Now, CCTV footage from September the 10th actually shows Shakira slowly, and I suppose the only way I could describe it is like painstakingly crossing a road. She's struggling to walk because she's clearly got injured feet. And then separate CCTV actually showed that she had these really severe injuries to her face. We get to September 12th, 2022, and at this point, even though these attackers have carried out this days of sustained attack, they're not finished. They basically shove Shakira, bleeding and seriously injured, into the boot of a car and they drive her at this point to her flat. A witness actually saw her fall. She couldn't walk to the house from the car. She's still alive, but it's obvious to anybody viewing the footage that she was really seriously injured. They also shove her in a cupboard in the hallway and then they just leave her. And there's no doubt in my mind whatsoever that they knew how badly injured that she was. And I genuinely think that they left her to die. I'm not saying that at that moment in time, they knew she was absolutely going to die, but I think they had a very good grasp on just how severely injured she was and how incomprehensible she'd have been at that point because of her injuries. And it doesn't take an Einstein to realize just how dangerous the injuries would have been for her. And then to leave her by herself in a cupboard, receiving no help, no medical attention. Well, what would the outcome be otherwise? Now, after leaving, CCTV again picks up footage that shows Studholme and Pendlebury basically buying kebabs. That's right. After they've just brutalised and tortured and all but murdered a woman over days, they're now buying kebabs and laughing. Laughing. They're walking to Studholme's home just as if they've got no cares in the world. What does that tell you about them? How antisocial is their personality? How dangerous are these predators that, apart from the fact that they can carry out the actions I've described, that they can just happily fill their stomach with a kebab as they are happily going about their business, being thrilled about what they've actually done to this poor woman? Now, the medical examiner had to decide when Shakira died, and they estimated it was on the 12th of September. The exact time of death isn't known for certain. Some reports actually actually say that she died on September the 14th. But what they do know is her body had been left for around 12 days before she was found. And they can tell that because of the decomposition and also, for example, maggots and flies, because they have a particular birth-death cycle and they can often place a time because of what they find on the body when it comes down to, like I said, decomposition and flies and maggots, etc. Now, the murderers, they actually returned back to that flat a number of times after Shakira's death. Why? Well, let me tell you, it wasn't because they wanted to check on how she was. It wasn't because they were thinking, oh my God, the error of our ways, what are we going to do? No, they went to clean it. They just thought to themselves, you know what, we've killed her, she's decomposing, so why don't we, knowing that we're not going to be challenged by anybody at this moment in time because no one's aware of what's happened, why don't we just go in, clean the crime scene? Let's try to just erase all the evidence that could indicate the involvement we've had with her death. Because I don't know, there are all a few sandwiches short of a picnic on the intelligence side, aren't there? Because you know what? You can clean somebody's flat, but the problem you have is the CCTV with you bobbing along there with your cleaning products going into a flat that isn't yours where there's a dead body. But obviously, none of the trio had had the memo of something that would be sophisticated in nature in trying to cover up a death at all. And of course, I'm glad about that. But there is something so arrogant about the fact that they literally think that they can try to get away with it by going to that flat where now there is a rotting corpse because they have killed this poor innocent woman. And they haven't actually thought that maybe CCTV might be filming them. Because also, aside from it being very incriminating, they keep turning up at the flat, they are seen on CCTV in the local shops buying odour neutralisers and cleaning supplies. And to add insult to injury, they even use Shakira's bank card to make the purchases. They're even using the woman that they've murdered money. They then move her body to a child's bunk bed. Now, some sources say in the bed, some people say at the foot of the bed, so I can't tell you which one it was, but it's around a bedroom. They then left her with ice packs. Why did they do that? Well, we all know why. Because they were trying to delay decomposition. They want to put some distance between them and her dying and them going round and cleaning. Now, Detective Chief Inspector Brian Howie said, one of the things that was really distressing about this case where Shakira was concerned is that he just believed that she genuinely wanted to be cared for, loved. She wanted a friendship group around her. And because of that vulnerability, just a general human vulnerability of desire and connection, she was coerced, she was manipulated over this really long period by these absolute hyenas, these absolute monsters, these people that she trusted. Now, a neighbour said that Shakira was a really lovable person. And I'll tell you the quote. They said, she was a lovable person, but very slow and socially awkward, who presented as someone with learning difficulties. I don't like that description. I really don't like that description, but equally, I can understand what the neighbour's trying to convey, that there was a vulnerability about her that makes it even more depraved that these people picked on her in such a horrendous way and utilised, coerced and destroyed her because they enjoyed the fun doing it and also because it paid them, because of course they were financially exploiting her. And I suppose what I would say is it definitely highlights that Shakira was vulnerable, because understandably, this is somebody who's a first person witness to the way that she would act around people. And that also makes me think, wow, Shakira must have just felt so safe initially when she met Studholme, Pendlebury and Richardson, that suddenly she got this group of people who didn't see her as socially awkward, who did want to hang out with her. And that must have been so uplifting for her. And little did she know that they wanted to exploit her. All she thought of was, great, I've got a nice group of friends. Now we get to September 2023. This is when the trial takes place. I don't necessarily know whether they deserved a trial. I just think get the elevator and send them down to the big burning hell right away. But apparently that's not a legal prerequisite in the UK. You actually have to go through things like a trial. Now Studholme, Pendlebury and Richardson, they all pled not guilty at this point. And they said they weren't involved in the murder and that they didn't prevent a lawful burial. So the things they've been charged with, they just reject, which is ludicrous. Of course it's ludicrous because they're on CCTV. But ever the optimists, maybe, when it comes down to court cases, they're all like, well, there's a really well-tried method in these cases, and that method is blame each other. Because you know how it's going to go. That's exactly what's going to happen, isn't it? Just blame each other and hope the shit sticks on the other people and not that individual protesting their innocence. Now, the evidence found by the police, which basically links all three individuals to the crime, it was rather, shall we say, compelling. Bloodstains on a doorframe in Studholme's flat, which was found to be an absolute DNA match to Shakira. Bloodstained shoes found at Pendlebury's home and CCTV footage capturing him wearing those shoes whilst carrying bin bags, trying to get rid of evidence. A little bit on the incriminating side there, Mr. I'm not guilty. Also, just to add to the weight of evidence, threatening messages and voice notes which have literally been sent directly to Shakira. Then Richardson's phone actually contained videos of Shakira being beaten up. She was literally on video, having her head kicked in. There's no other way of stating it. It's as bad as that. These are all, by the way, genuinely purporting to be innocent, in spite of what I'm telling you now. It must have been breathtakingly difficult for the police to contain themselves. I could never do that because I would just want to literally take the phone with those digital images and want to insert it where the sun didn't shine, where the defendant was protesting their innocence. That again, it's not legal in the UK to do that. I'm just saying that's the kind of rage it would provoke in me when we're talking about this kind of brutality. Now, CCTV also showed a red car that Pendlebury had borrowed literally from his auntie driving to Shakira's flat after her death. And why would you go to a flat when somebody's dead and then not call emergency services? Just throwing it out there. If you're innocent, if you've done nothing wrong, you're going to go to that flat in your auntie's red car. You're going to walk in and then they're going to see you running out, horrified, calling 999. They'll arrive and take it from there. No, that's not what happened because they clearly have them on CCTV visiting when she's dead and then visiting again to clean and not alerting anyone. And what else did they find in that very car? They found bloodstains, and the analysis of those bloodstains showed that blood was Shakira's. Also, one of the horrible things about this case, it just evidences the way that Studholme is in life, full stop, because I believe this person is utterly evil. She was found to actually have Shakira's trust fund documents, bank accounts, personal documentation, and also disability allowance applications. Studholme was basically in receipt of all of her benefits and had control of all of her finances. Now, that takes a highly manipulative individual, very dangerous individual, and somebody who cares so little about the person that's meant to be her friend that she can exploit her on every single level, emotional, social, physical, etc. Now, another really devastating, incriminating, and utterly traumatic reality of this case is that when Shakira is being attacked so brutally and hideously, two children witnessed it. Now, they can't be identified, and rightfully so, they've got anonymity, but they gave evidence bravely in court, and they'd actually witnessed the beating of Shakira on September the 9th, and that was the beating that ultimately led to her death. Now, these are referred to as Child A, who was a 12-year-old girl, and Child B, who was a 10-year-old boy. Now, Child A actually witnessed Pendlebury smashing Shakira over the head with a glass bottle. It's unbelievable. There's a child witnessing that. They then said that they witnessed all three defendants circling Shakira, kicking her, attacking her. And by the way, she was crying at this point. She's begging them to stop. And again, just let this sink in. There are two children witnessing this gang mob violence, this absolute pack mentality, this animalistic desire to destroy this innocent woman. They're watching it play out. Now, after a period of violence, apparently the three stop actually abusing her, take some time out, eat dinner with the children, and then they go back to continue the assault. Can you get your heads around that? Like, they literally stopped, had food, and then returned to continue the harrowing attack. Can you imagine the reality those children went to? The traumatic psychological abuse that they're enduring whilst witnessing this. The stains in their conscience that will remain with them for the rest of their natural lives. Being helpless, because what can you do when you're 10 and 12? There's nothing you can do, and the adults are in control. And by the way, if the adults are in control and they're killing someone in front of your eyes, what are you going to do? What are you going to say? Because it could be you next. It is haunting for me to imagine what those children feel today, because this is something that will remain with them a lifetime. Also, they got the kids involved. Child A was told to fill a kettle. Then once this kettle has boiled, the murderers scalded Shakira with that water, and she's screaming at this point. They then made her strip. They're filming, making her strip. So she just does what they tell her, because they're already being so dangerous around her that she knows that the consequences, if she says no, are going to be even worse than she's enduring in that moment. Child A then said that they literally saw Studholm, this person that she had initially believed was her friend, make a blowtorch using an aerosol spray and a lighter. And they used that to burn Shakira. And ironically, at one point, Studholm's thumb was apparently sore from pressing the aerosol. So they give it to Pendlebury, and then Pendlebury carries on. Understandably, Shakira at this point is so badly injured. The pain is so grotesque and torturous that she actually loses consciousness. She faints, she bangs her head. And then at this point, she is dragged into the hallway, and apparently she sleeps for a period of time, and she's literally covered in newspapers in her own urine. I'm describing something that happened to a human being. Sometimes when I say these words and I don't pause for a moment, it's easy to let go of what the statements have been before I get to this point. But what I'm talking about here is the most grotesque, brutal assault and torture. The fact that this human being is being made to sleep under urine-soaked newspaper. The fact that her body is bruised, broken, bloodied, burnt. And this is the woman who's done nothing wrong, nothing. She's not got in a conflict. She's not got into an altercation. This isn't a situation where some horrendous serial killer has walked in and she's being tortured by a stranger. This is a group of people she believed in, she trusted, she was friends with, and listen to what they are doing. They're using a blowtorch on her. They are scalding her skin off, and they are forcing her to sleep on the floor with less dignity than an animal. Child A, when they were reflecting on what they endured and what they witnessed, they said that they still can remember the smell of burnt dead skin. But this is burnt dead skin on a woman who's still alive. And that abuse that I've just described just carried on the next day. Can you imagine the state that Shakira is in at this moment in time? Child B actually drew pictures, and the pictures were of Studholm with an angry face hitting Shakira. And in those pictures, they demonstrated that Shakira had an indented mark to her cheek and mouth. And they also drew pictures of Pendlebury hitting Shakira and the fact that saliva was coming out of her mouth. Just listen to how this child's conscience has been stained by their actions. He also, that little boy, drew fire being thrown and also made a whooshing sound. And he said that it actually made him feel sick. He said that Studholm hit Shakira when she was in the kitchen, and that Shakira had a really sad face, and that Pendlebury was, quote, whacking Shakira in the head. He said that Richardson slapped Shakira's face and it was squishing her head like it was a banana. He said it was so hard, it took her brains out. I don't even want to imagine what that description is actually describing, because the injuries were just so profound on Shakira that they may have witnessed content from her head coming out of her ears that might actually have happened. And this is a child. He also said that when he last saw Shakira, she was basically incoherent and she was acting in a really strange way that he didn't like. Well, of course, because the brain damage is obvious in that situation, isn't it? It is just incalculable. It's just incomprehensible. We're talking about this woman, this mother of two, and this is how she's going to end. The judge actually said this is one of the starkest features of this case, that children A and B were drawn into this horror, and that you three defendants acted in this savage way in the presence of young children. The effect on them will not become known for some considerable time. We can all see just from the descriptions, they're horrifically traumatized. Now, Alison Hunter, who was speaking for the prosecution, she said, in early 2021, Shakira Spencer had been a healthy, even voluptuous size 16. She weighed some 74 kilograms, so 11 stone 9. She went on to say that by July 2022, Shakira Spencer was just skin and bone, gaunt and skeletal, bruised from head to foot with hollowed black eyes. She said she was barely a scrawny size 6. And you can see those in the images that the actual defendants took before she died. I mean, she's just absolutely skin and bone. They went on to say, for whatever was their unfathomable, cruel, sadistic motive, these three defendants tormented, tortured, starved, burned, and eventually battered Shakira Spencer to death. They also said that due to the advanced state of decomposition, that the specific cause of death couldn't be determined, but there was absolutely no doubt whatsoever that she was killed by her injuries that she had had inflicted upon her. And just to run through some of those, she had 6 head injuries, including 4 areas of full thickness lacerations, which were caused by blunt trauma. Her left ear had literally been crushed, and that indicates, of course, that she was stomped on. She had a fracture to her left eye socket and degloving injuries to her hands and feet, which means that the skin had just come off completely. Now, of course, when it came down to the defendants, what did they do? Well, they did exactly what I said earlier on. It wasn't me, Gov. It was them's two. You know, at the end of the day, everybody knows in these kind of situations, you're going to try to project blame onto another party, but it's not going to wash because of all the things I talked about earlier on, from CCTV to analysis of DNA to 2 first-person witnesses of the abuse of this woman. But that doesn't bother these individuals. They somehow think, I can deny my own culpability and I can get away with it. Now, bear in mind, Pendlebury had actually initially confessed to his family. So what on earth he's saying, I'm not involved in the murder now, makes no sense whatsoever. But hey, you love a trier, don't you? Well, no, God doesn't always love a trier, but the big D-E-V-I-L will happily accept them into his burning throng. And I'm sure that that will be where Pendlebury will be going. But he basically denies all that. He tells the court, no, I didn't kill her. I visited Shakira twice. I actually went to check on her. I went to bring her food. Of course you did. Yeah, of course you did. Yeah, everyone's going to believe that. You weren't a murderer. You were a hero. You weren't trying to harm her. You were trying to help her. Of course. That's why you told your family member you'd killed her. He also said that on one visit on September the 13th, he'd found her in a cupboard. Yeah, just found her in a cupboard. And he added, to me, she seemed in a bad way. I asked if she wanted me to call her an ambulance. She said, no, no, I'm fine. So I gave her some soup. This, I kid you not, guys, this is, he literally said this. And I said, I'll come back later and see you. He said, when I got back to the house, I actually got her into a child's bed. I helped her drink the soup. It was a bit too thick for her to have it through a straw. And he's literally telling this absolute fabrication of reality. But yeah, like I said, this isn't a guy who's harmed her. This is a guy who's gone round, tried to help her. But at the end of the day, obviously too little, too late. It was gone too far. She's really unwell. That's his kind of suggestion. Now just put yourself in that position. You know, we've all got challenging friends who won't accept help when you know that they need it. I have lived that life in many circumstances. But let me tell you, if I were to toddle on round to my best mate's house now, and I was like, Trish, where are you, Trish? And then I'm like, oh, she doesn't seem to be. Oh, hang on. There's a cupboard over there. Just open the cupboard. And there's Trish, basically ravaged by some kind of horrendous attack or illness. And at that point, I know that she's in a really bad way. I'm not going to ask her a question at all because I'm going to already be on the phone to 999 emergency services to get an ambulance directly to her place of residence. And also, even if she was going, no, I'm fine, when she looked like she wasn't, I'd be calling the ambulance anyway because that's what friends do. I wouldn't be like, oh, well, let me just help you get to this child's bed or maybe the foot of the bed. And then I've got some really nice soup. It's a little bit thick for the straw. I don't even know why I bought a straw because how would I know you were so badly injured that you'd require to drink it through a straw? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go and get a spoon and I'm going to feed you. No one in the history of walking into a situation where somebody's in a cupboard looking like they're about to die acts that way. But this has escaped him when it comes down to his specific alibi, where he's trying to make out that somehow he's a man sent from heaven to this woman who's in need, but not quite needy enough for him to make a phone call to emergency services. So he said, look, I left her. She was in a bad way, did nothing about it, but she was still alive. And then he adds that the only way he found out about the fact that Shakira had passed was because Studholme had phoned him and told him. At this point, he was like, you know what? I can't believe that. So just again, I'm sorry, but this drives me to the brink of insanity. His response is, sorry, what's that? Yeah, I'm really sorry. Shakira's dead. God, she wasn't in a good way last time I saw her. No. Now she's dead. Gosh, what are we going to do about that? Well, I mean, there's not a lot we can do for Shakira. Do you know what I'm going to do? No, go on. I'm just going to go around and check. Just make sure that she's definitely dead. No, she's dead. I'm on the phone telling you. No, I'm going to go and check. And literally, that's what he says. That this phone call happened and he went round to check for himself because, you know, he couldn't quite believe it. Oh, my God. To add insult to injury in this case, just saying statements like that is beyond ludicrous. Can you imagine the jury? And can you imagine her poor family, her loving family, sitting there listening to this absolute parade of fantasy and deception? It's just disgusting. He actually said, I seen Shakira basically motionless on the bed. I left straight away. I went back and told Studholme that she was indeed correct. I mean, it's just beyond disgraceful, this absolute fabrication he's making up. He also then said that he went to Richardson's flat with Studholme, and he said that his girlfriend told him that she couldn't go back to jail. So now he's saying, oh, you know, at the end of the day, Studholme did say some incriminating things, like she didn't want to go back to jail. So why would she say that unless maybe she'd done something like murder Shakira? You can just see how he's trying to dig himself out from the grave he's clearly going to be buried alive in. Now, Richardson, they go for a completely different kind of, I wasn't involved. She says, listen, I was kind of there. I did see the attacks upon Shakira by my mates Studholme and Pendlebury, but guess what? I wasn't involved. No, you were complicit even if you were just present and not engaging. It's ludicrous to me, but you can just see how she tried to mitigate and minimise. I wasn't actually the person throwing the lethal blows. I was just watching, as if a normal human being with a shred of compassion would be like, well, I'm just going to sit here and watch these two murder somebody in front of my very eyes and then I'll just crack on with my life. It just defies and beggars belief that people think that they can pull the wool over the eyes of the jury and court. Because clearly, if you were in a situation, let's just throw it out there, you're in a situation where your friends are doing something unbelievably criminal and disgraceful and in fact murderous, and you are seeing it. Now, let's just give the benefit of a doubt to somebody who might be in a situation where they haven't got the strength and they don't have the capacity in that moment to challenge these individuals doing horrific things. They might want to just stay quiet because they think to themselves, if they're capable of harming this person who's going to be a friend, maybe they're capable of harming me in that way as well. And you may wrongly, as far as I'm concerned, withdraw from helping that person in the moment. However, the minute you're by yourself, what are you going to do? You're going to be on the blower to 999 telling them you are not going to believe what I've just witnessed, because you don't want to be a co-conspirator, you don't want to be implicated, and you do want those people who've done something so heinous as murder a friend to be brought to justice. So again, she isn't making sense, and she actually just looks like an even more disgraceful human being, because there are first witnesses that say, absolutely, she was involved in the assaults. But also what she said is, though I didn't necessarily contribute, I did abstain from helping, and then I didn't tell anybody. So she looks guilty as hell. Now, the trial, it lasted for 12 weeks. That's how big it was. And you won't be surprised to know, on December the 11th, 2023, Sean Pendlebury, Ashana Studholme, and Lisa Richardson got the book thrown at them. I wish that literally happened when you get sent to prison for murder. I wish you got a lot of books thrown at you, very heavy books, those really old type books with the big leather binding that look like it could do some serious damage, because if anybody deserves that, they deserve it. They're all found guilty of the murder of Shakira Spencer and also preventing her lawful burial. The jurors did take 12 hours to make the decision, so they obviously really thought it through as to whether people were indeed as culpable as one another. Then after reaching their verdicts, and I think rightfully so in this case, the judge said, you will never have to do jury service again. that the evidence you've listened to is so traumatic, so harrowing, we will never put you in the line of fire ever again for the rest of your lives. Now, on March the 1st, 2024, the sentencing of the killers takes place. They were given life in prison for murder with a minimum term of 34 years. I like the judge in this case. I like the judge in this case. Because that's a long sentence in the UK. Yes, you can give the rest of natural life, and I think they all deserve it, but I'm happy that 34 years is the minimum. It doesn't mean they'll get out. It means that's the first time they'll be considered for parole, if indeed they survive that long, and I hope that they do not. Now, as well as that 34 years, they were given another 5 years, but they are going to serve that concurrently as opposed to consecutively, preventing the lawful burial. And Judge Angela Rafferty, who presided over this case, said, "I want to ensure that the valuable life of Shakira Spencer is not forgotten in this sentencing exercise. I've heard and I have read that those who knew her describe her and her particular qualities of innocence and vulnerability. She was lovable, soft, trusting, and she was easy to take advantage of. She needed a lot of help and support. She was shy, she was timid, she was sweet-natured, and she adored her two children. She had succeeded in living an independent, productive life for quite some time, not without difficulties, but nonetheless, she'd managed it. And her friend said that a calculated person would easily be able to exploit Shakira. In fact, the judge said she was no match for the three of you." Now, in the sentencing remarks, the judge said that leaving Shakira in the cupboard without getting her medical attention was literally barbaric. In fact, she said, "Given this orgy of violence," I think that's such an excellent way of describing it, an orgy of violence, and she's correct, but she said, "Given this orgy of violence, I am no doubt that you all intended to kill Shakira Spencer. I'm also sure, on the evidence, including that given by you, Pendlebury and Richardson, that this was a sadistic killing in which you all took pleasure in inflicting pain, suffering, and humiliation on a vulnerable woman. The lack of pity, empathy or decency towards Shakira was marked in everything you said, even when on trial in front of a jury. None of you take any responsibility and continue to blame each other. You have no remorse. Your only concern continues to be for yourselves." Now, I've stood home. The judge said that her personality was manipulative, dominant and aggressive. The judge said, "You took full advantage of Shakira Spencer." The judge also said, "You've provided evidence of what you're doing in prison. There was considerable evidence that you looked to systems and individuals with an eye to control and benefit. And in fact, this became an issue in the trial towards the end when you wrote notes to Lisa Richardson in the dock. You have told the probation officer a pack of manipulative lies and you've shown no remorse whatsoever." The judge also said that Richardson had shown that she can be a caring individual to others, so both in custody and also that witness child A was very loyal to her, but that Shakira didn't ever get to see that side of her. In fact, Richardson instead showed a complete lack of empathy towards her. Now, the judge noted that Pendlebury had a low IQ. He was also described as very compliant, but the judge said, "In spite of all that, you were fully involved. You were absolutely 100% engaged in this abuse, and there was nothing to suggest that you were unwillingly under the power or control of any others. In fact," the judge said, "you took a full part in the torture." Now, Senior Crown Prosecutor Debbie Caron said, "Evidence presented during the trial proved that Pendlebury, Studholme and Richardson exercised twisted and sadistic control of Shakira Spencer over an extended period. They spun a web of lies in every effort to hide their actions. The CPS built a strong case against them using video footage filmed by the defendants themselves, mobile phone evidence, forensic analysis, and a confession from Sean Pendlebury himself, which proved beyond reasonable doubt that they were absolutely responsible for her death." They went on to say that the level of suffering that Shakira endured is simply unimaginable. They also said, "Our thoughts remain with all of Shakira's family and friends. I hope this conviction brings them some sense of justice." Also, Detective Inspector Brian Howie said, "During the trial, Shakira's family and friends listened to deeply traumatizing evidence of the depraved acts of cruel torment committed by the three defendants. They murdered Shakira in the most savage and inhumane way imaginable. Shakira was a beautiful, happy mother who was kind, who had a trusting nature. Yes, Shakira could be vulnerable. And these defendants took advantage of that by controlling and isolating her from everyone she knew in order to control and enslave her in the most dehumanizing and degrading way. The family's ordeal has been compounded by the behavior of the defendants who have each lied, providing implausible accounts and explanations to try and absolve themselves of any responsibility, whatever their cruel and sadistic motives were. There is no acceptable explanation for what Shakira was put through. And Shakira's family actually made a statement which said, Shakira was a beautiful soul who cared deeply about people and just loved spending time with her family and friends. She was always thoughtful. She wanted to be liked. In fact, her eagerness to please people, that's what made her vulnerable. We have struggled as a family to come to terms with the fact that Shakira was controlled, enslaved and tortured by the defendants in the months leading up to her murder. The defendants took over her flat while she slept in the bike shed. They isolated her from her friends and family. Her children were poisoned against her. Shakira's health deteriorated to the point where she was almost unrecognizable. Her life was reduced to an empty and miserable existence. We will never be able to comprehend the defendant's cruelty when Shakira would have only wanted to be their friend. We can only think that the defendants have done this for their own sadistic pleasure. We were incredibly pleased and relieved when we found out that all three defendants would be held accountable for their heinous crimes. However, nothing will bring Shakira back to us, and her children will now grow up without their mother. Shakira's mother also added, she always wanted to be liked. It made her keen to please people and thoughtful, but it also made her vulnerable. The defendants have, over many months, taken away everything that Shakira loved. She was isolated from her family and friends. Her health deteriorated. She was almost unrecognizable. The defendants were not content with the complete destruction of Shakira's life. When she was at her lowest, the defendants have tortured and murdered her like a pack of animals. And Shakira's son described the murderers as evil. And I think he's absolutely right. They are evil. He said they do not deserve to live a normal, happy life. And I absolutely 100% agree with him. I high five him. That's correct. He said, I cannot get the horrible image of my mother looking skinny and unwell out of my head. Why were the defendants so heartless? What could cause them to torture another human? To me, my mum was the best. She wasn't perfect, but she made me feel happy, safe and loved. I miss her every single day. I wish for a chance to see and speak with her again. I never got to say goodbye to her or to tell her that I loved her. These people let her die alone with a feeling she was unloved as they'd taken everybody from her. And Irina, obviously Shakira's much loved sister, she said that she had such remorse that she couldn't save her sister. She said she's going to be haunted by that and that she's never going to recover from the way she died. She said, Shakira and I were so close, it hurt so much that she couldn't come to me for help. They must have brainwashed her and controlled her to the point where she couldn't confide in anyone. Now, as a result of Shakira's case, Ealing Safeguarding Adults Board and Ealing Safeguarding Children Partnership carried out a review. The review isn't actually legally allowed to be available to the public, not as yet anyway. And they did state, however, that there were a number of learning points, aren't there always? Learning points, lessons learned from the reviews that they do. And these included that they needed to consider all the information held by schools, because the schools in this case knew the family very well, and school staff had observed changes in their behaviour, as in the children's, over time. And they actually held a significant amount of information that was really important to establishing an accurate understanding of the children's lived experience. And the school staff said, listen, we knew this, we heard this, we felt this, we recorded this, but we felt that our voices were not adequately heard when we were advocating for these children. In fact, when we advocate for other vulnerable children. And it was actually noted that many assessments of children resulted in no further action. And it was highlighted in this case that the children were well known to agencies, but not known at all, which is unbelievably concerning. So the review has shown that the response to the potential harm experienced by this family as a result of the actions of others was basically limited. Now, in the absence of an active attempt by early help services to build a relationship with the family in order to address the reported incidents and impact of abuse on her life and also the children involved, opportunity to improve the welfare of all the family members were basically lost. So lessons learned, guys, but a little bit too late as ever. This case is utterly devastating, isn't it? It just makes you stop. It just makes you ask yourself, how can somebody that you believe is a close friend, someone that you believe you could trust, that you had a connection with, how can it deteriorate so massively into such cruelty? At the end of the day, Shakira and Ashana were close at some point. What changed? What happened in Ashana's psychology that literally allowed her to start dehumanizing someone she cared about? I wonder whether it's because Ashana puts her own needs above everything and she wants financial stability and she wants to exploit anybody who has things that she would like. And at the end of the day, Shakira presented that opportunity. She had money, she had benefits, and she thought, I'm taking those. And then as she dehumanizes her through feeling that she had an entitlement to steal, it enabled her to press on with this even more dehumanizing physical behavior to a point where Shakira is no longer human as far as she's concerned. She's just this punching bag that she can use for any means that she desires. When it comes down to these kind of scenarios, you do tend to see a dynamic where one person in particular identifies as vulnerable and the others really exploit that. So instead of responding with compassion, they just absolutely amplify the exploitation because it's easy for them to do so. Also, I guess it's possible that one of the things that Ashana did was recognize how much Shakira valued the relationship with her. So then she starts testing the limits. She escalates the control. She just pushes the boundaries to see how much will Shakira endure. And it blows my mind to imagine what was the point in the relationship where that dynamic shifted from mentor and friend to monster and killer. You know, you don't just wake up one morning and decide to be horrible to someone that you care about. Was it that Ashana was an individual so power pissed that she was intoxicated by the fact that she could exert this control? Now, of course, by the way, nothing excuses the behavior, but I'm just trying to stand in the position where I can understand the trigger. What causes that shift from friend to perpetrator? Because we need to understand that, because how else will we identify and prevent similar situations in the future? What's really sad is that because of COVID, because of the exploitation of this woman, etc., the compounding factors in that, she became isolated. And maybe she became emotionally dependent on those horrible human beings for a period of time. And so, with respect, her vulnerability is amplified to the highest degree. At the end of the day, her dad said, I love you. Come and spend time with me. She had a way out, but she didn't take it. I mean, we'll never know the decisions behind why she didn't take it, but it makes me think about cults. It makes me think about high-level domestic perpetrators, coercive controllers, people who make you feel so afraid of taking action that you are frozen, frozen even in the most brutal and devastating of scenarios. She had a way out, but she couldn't see it or take it because she was so terrified about the consequences. What had they told her? Had they threatened her children? Had they told her they would harm others that she loved? Who is she protecting by failing to protect herself? Because I genuinely believe they exploited her to a point where she was genuinely brainwashed and believed the shit that they were peddling. It's absolutely devastating to imagine this lovely, loving, compassionate human being was brutalized in one of the most grotesque of fashions. I'm sure that all of you listening to this will have taken moments to flinch at the torture that she endured. And I'm sure that all of you applaud the fact that at least 34 years as a minimum sentence seems to offer those who loved her at least a sense of justice. Although I believe genuinely that the true justice will happen when each of those three takes their last breath and then has an eternity burning. Let me know your thoughts in the comments, guys. As ever, take care of yourselves, hold your friends closer, remind yourself of how fortunate you are when you have those good people in your lives, because some people, just some people, fall prey to exactly what Shakira has, a pack group of people who enjoy the destruction of a person with more integrity and beauty in her little finger than they have all together. Look after yourselves, guys. Be safe.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.